show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. American League Central, number one seed in the American League edition of the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We have a lot to talk about. As we record this right now on Tuesday, the New York Yankees and the Houston Astros are playing each other. It's in the bottom of the first inning as I speak. So we're not certain who the Royals are going to play, but we've still got a lot to talk about. Either way, we're going to start with talking about some of the over-under predictions that Mike and I made at the beginning of the season. But before we do that, of course, your introductions. I am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me, of course, is the analog preferred Michael Engel. Mike, how are you on this? Not quite playoff eve, but it's officially playoffs. They're here, man. How's it? How you feeling?
It's postseason. It's pretty cool. I was like, I still can't decide who I want to win this game, but I'm still anxious to be watching it anyway.
Yes.
Because it's directly going to determine parts of how the Royals are going to do in this postseason.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's pretty exciting. It's pretty cool. I mean, playoff baseball. I mean, yep. 2 years in a row. That's awesome.
I know.
Like, that's amazing. So I'm pretty pumped up.
Yeah, it's, you know, rarely, maybe I'm different than most, but rarely for me, is baseball a sport where, and I feel like it's pretty common, people don't as often want to sit down and just watch baseball as much. It's a very regional sport. If your team's not playing, I feel like you don't get a ton of viewers outside of that. Playoffs, you know, kind of a little bit different into the mix, but you know, that's when, you know, tonight is that first time I've really felt that grab to be like, oh man, I really want to watch this game, you know, put Astros play the Yankees, like you said, because it's got some determining factors in how the Royals are going to be. But we'll get to that in a little bit later. Mike, let's start with this, with the over unders here, as you you so graciously transcribed your finally written notebook, ruled notebook paper, into an email to
loose
review.
Leaf.
Yes, to review everything that we discussed at the beginning of the season. So let's just dive right in here. First one that we talked about, Eric Hosmer. We set the over under for Eric Hosmer's season batting average at 290, and I was the under, and yeah, you were the over. So tip of the cap there. That one goes to you, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I when we checked that at the All-Star break, he was like at 291. So he went on a couple of different hot streaks. He's been streaky all year, but finished at 297. He's been a lot more willing to take a walk. His power's kind of come back, you know, relative to where it's been in the past. I think career high in extra base hits this year. So, yeah, I mean, Eric Hosmer kind of came through. He, you know, 297, 363, 459 line. That's pretty good. That's career best OPS plus. That's career best in on base percentage and close in slugging. So not too bad. So I kind of figured it was going to be one of those odd year things where he had a good season, and lo and behold, he had a good season.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, my reasoning for not taking the under on that one was because I felt like he would sacrifice a little bit of the batting average for more power. Because he only hit, was it 9 home runs last year?
So I don't know if that's pulled up, runs.
But it was, yeah. And
he missed a month, but still 9. I mean, he'd been in double digits every other season. So
I mean, he went, you know, even without the injury, he had went, you know, 6 weeks or something without hitting a home run at one point.
Yeah.
And he had a similar stretch this season, but I'm sorry, I don't have the stats pulled up. Do we have how many he ended with?
He ended with
18. Okay.
Yeah. So one off his career high. I really wanted him to get 2 more so he would have that just round number of 20.
Yeah.
So he could, you know, break that. It didn't happen.
Yeah. And while he didn't completely sell out for power, the power did look like it came back a little bit more. And, you know, the drop off that I was the kind of trade off that I was anticipating wasn't there, which is a fantastic thing for Eric Hosmer. But he really did have a really good season, and it felt now more than last year, more than anything, that he's really stepped in. I mean, everyone's kind of, you see the articles on ESPN in the offseason, face of the franchise, and you know, a lot of people kind of pick Alex Gordon, but he's not vocal enough, and a lot of talk of Eric Hosmer, and this was the first season, at least for me, that I really felt he kind of stepped up and grabbed that mantle. When you really needed a serious, kind of honest, candid answer, Hosmer was the guy that went to. You saw him talking people down a lot in the dugout when they were struggling. You know, you really saw him kind of be that kind of vocal leader, which I thought was really cool to see. I mean, do you kind of get that feeling as well? Or
yeah, he if you remember back in April or you know, in when the Royals were starting all these fights, there was one interview at one point, and I think it was that game against the White Sox where he had the double.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, and that was the game where there were the actual, like, the only one where actual punches were thrown. You know, the Adam Eaton, Yordan Ventura thing, and he said, you know, we want to get focused on playing ball and get over this kind of stuff. And the Royals really did kind of calm it down from that point. So he's been the kind of the mouthpiece for a lot of, you know, MLB Network. He was featured in MLB The Show ads for the video game, things like that. So he's, you know, he's that guy. And he turns 26 later this month. So he's in his peak years. He's had a career year, and, you know, he's going to win another Gold Glove. He almost made the All-Star team. You know, he's coming right into his own and, you know, on the field and in the clubhouse. So that's pretty cool. I mean, that's kind of the guy, the franchise cornerstone guy you expected. You know, maybe you would like to see him in the 25 homer range, but, you know, he did evolve a bit as a hitter. Again, career high in walks. He did strike out more, but, you know, he was willing to take a lot of pitches that he hasn't in the past. And so that's pretty encouraging for the next couple of years while he's still under team control.
Yeah. And you mentioned the Gold Glove defense, and he's definitely going to win another one. And you don't really look at first base as that flashy defensive position. Yeah. You can make some flashy plays over there, but you don't see it as that kind of shortstop mold of you're going to save a lot of runs, but they were kind of talking about it on the broadcast the other night. And, you know, some of it is just kind of luck in the sense that, you know, Hosmer being such a large guy, 6'4", you know, they're talking about how just being tall allows him to save a lot of runs because, you know, he has a higher reach. And then even if he were to jump, you know, saves a ball from going into the stands. And, the Astros just took the lead. Wow.
Oh,
Huge shot. Wow. Is that Kobe Rasmus? Yep.
Yep. That's 26. A legit homer, though.
Wow. That was, he smoked that thing. That was gone from the start. Anyway, so.
Wow.
As of right now, Houston has a 1-0 lead. But, but yeah, so Hosmer being able to, you know, so that's very good. But then his athleticism allows him to also, you know, make the really tough plays, make a tough grounder, get up, get to the bag on time, or get the ball to the pitcher, make those scoop plays and everything. And you don't realize it until you or you don't really appreciate it as much until you kind of sit down and look at it and say, man, he really does do a fantastic job. And he probably has saved more runs than you. I haven't looked at the stats, to be honest, but I mean, he probably does save quite a bit more runs than you would, you know, the average first baseman. And that's definitely something good to have.
I would bet. And I think a lot of times he ends up with a lot of those foul balls that go towards the seats and where you really have to range for them. And I think mm-hmm. he's just more athletic. I mean, you compare him to Adam Lind or David Ortiz if they're playing first base. Ortiz doesn't usually, but like, you know, Napoli has in the past. And, mm-hmm. you know, first base is usually where you just station a guy.
Prince Fielder.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, he can get to a lot of stuff that a lot of guys can't. And that's a big advantage for him. And, you know, by extension, a big advantage for the Royals. So, you know, even though first base is the lowest on that defensive spectrum, it's something where that Hosmer being effective over there saves so many throws from the other infielders. It saves, you know, extra outs that he can get by ranging for him. He's got pretty good instincts, and they're getting better as he gets older mm-hmm. too. So that's a great thing to see.
And that's one of those things where you talk, you know, from a synergistic standpoint, Hosmer being able to, you know, make those picks off the ground and being able to stretch and get those high throws makes Moose look better, makes Escobar look better. You know, otherwise they might have been charged an error. They might have, you know, they're
maybe don't fielding even metrics try to throw in the first place.
Exactly. But they know they've got him there. So it's been a great thing to see him mature this season. And you got to hope that he takes this season and last year's postseason and brings it into this postseason. But we'll move right along here. Next was a couple ones that we'll just go ahead and group these together.
Yeah.
With an asterisk. Alex Gordon, the over under for home runs from Alex Gordon was 19. Mike, you picked the under. I went with the over. He finished with 13, but he missed roughly 2 months of the season.
Yeah.
With an injury. So kind of inconclusive there. And Gordon falls into that same mold as Hosmer of just these incredibly hot scorching streaks followed by just, you know, where the hell is he 2-for-20 type streaks.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's truly, to be honest, that's what's stopping those two from being truly elite players in baseball. But I mean, that's not really fair because that's what stops most players from being elite. So, you know, that's not necessarily a knock on them, but that's the only thing.
But if you make it a 2-for-10 instead of a 2-for-20,
absolutely.
Just a little thing like that where, well, I guess that's two games, but you know, it's like, you know, instead of Hosmer going a full month without hitting a homer, maybe he just finds one and it's every 2 weeks, you know.
It's one two extra home runs in a month or something instead of none, and then hits 4 or 5 the rest of the months. You know, that's what you hope for. But the other with Gordon was the 10 outfield assists. Mike again had the over, and I had the under. So again, inconclusive.
Yeah, can't really count. I'm not going to bank a win on the home run one, and I wouldn't think you would bank a win on the assist because you missed 2 months. It wasn't a full slate of action.
Yeah, and I mean, it's pretty reasonable. I think the home run one is
he may have had a shot if he was healthy
a little bit more in play.
Yeah,
But then again, you never know. So we'll just kind of those were inconclusive, but Gordon another Alex Gordon season. I mean, you can't really complain. Had some great, fantastic defensive plays. Was there offensively when they needed him. Had some cold spells, but he came back from a really, really bad looking injury, and it looks as though he's kind of, I don't know if I'll say heating up, but he's definitely after a little bit of a rough go of it has looks like he's getting things back, getting his timing back, getting everything back ready to go right in time for the playoffs.
Yep. And you know, last year he had a 118 OPS plus. This year it's 120. So there's some consistency there, but at the same time last year that OPS plus led the team. This time that's behind three other guys. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, he doesn't have to be the man. If he stepped up to be the man, that'd be great. But
yeah,
you know, he's just part of just a balanced lineup that's very productive this year. So it's good to see that he's healthy and apparently fully recovered.
Yeah, and it's great to see, because it's that kind of puts it into perspective that it wasn't, because being so consistent with his with last year, it just goes to show that it isn't the offense, you know, just one guy having a monster year that's making it look better. The offense has gone up a tier, you know, the entire offense. So it's not something that's inflated. That's just something that, a numbers thing that people can point to. It's a legitimate improvement all the way around from the offense.
Yep. And a big part of that is the next guy on our list, Kendrys Morales, who we tried to guess at 15 homers. We both thought he would hit more than that, and he hit 22. So a full the kind of speculation the Royals did was, would a full spring training make him better? And so obviously I think the verdict is out on that. 22 homers, he had basically a similar type of season to what he had done before his injury, on that freak injury where he celebrated and jumped on home plate. 106 RBIs, which I think was third in the American League, 41 doubles, which is among the leaders, 290 average, 485 slugging, led the team in OPS plus. For a team that missed Billy Butler's bat last year, even though he was on the team, and lost him this year, Morales filled in and more so. And, I think the Royals made a pretty savvy pickup on that. So 22 homers, that's significantly better than 15. And I don't think you can be anything but pleased with what Morales did this year.
You know, he's definitely going to get some votes, if not win comeback player of the year. And I'm not always sure where that, in terms of voting for that type of an award, how that's kind of directed. If it's, looking for players coming back from injury, coming back from just bad seasons or what, because I think like Prince Fielder has had, what you would call a pretty good comeback year, but also so has some like Ryan Madsen and
Chris. Chris Young maybe last year.
Yeah. And, Mike Moustakas, who got sent down to the minors in May last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's one of the best third basemen in the American League.
Or like Alex Rodriguez, who, even though it was a suspension situation, he still came back and had a good season. So, and I think Morales, Fielder, and A-Rod are on the MLBPA ballot for comeback player of the year.
They are. Okay.
I think, but I think there's a second award. So I don't know. I don't know what the official one or what. So it's also pretty low on the totem pole.
It's one of those words
cool
that
get it, but
it's nice to have, but it's kind of reminds me of I play a video game, Destiny, and when you play PvP, if you get killed a bunch of times in a row and then you come back and you make a kill, it says like, welcome back or whatever the medal is, something like that. I always call it the congratulations, you stopped sucking for a little bit. So that's what that, not to be as crass, but that's kind of what that feels like sometimes. Like, yeah, it's great that I won this award because it means I had a good season. But at the same time, it's like it means that everyone is recognizing how awful the previous season was. Right. If you're coming back from an injury, then it's a little different. But
that's acceptable. But yeah,
either way,
you sucked. Well,
yeah, either way, I think you have to, regardless of whether he wins that award or not, I don't know if you can find a better move, free agent signing or trade. Maybe a trade, just because of how well Tulowitzki helped out the Blue Jays and David Price. But that standing, in terms of an off-season, I should say.
Off-season and kind of just not a big headline kind of move.
Yeah, savvy. Solid move. I mean, I don't know if you'll find a better one. The only one that could rival it, honestly, would be probably, I guess I'd have to go look at all the free agent signings, but I mean, Edinson Volquez signing probably pretty close. And then, I mean, you look at Brian Madsen. I mean,
Chris Young.
I mean,
Chris Young has the second best wins above replacement among all Royals pitchers.
Wow.
Behind Wade Davis.
Wow. I mean, if you were to make a list of the top 10 offseason moves, I mean, you'd have to say Dayton Moore and the Royals probably have at least three.
I think I saw something like that on Twitter. I don't remember where I saw it from, but that, you know, basically all of those guys, Morales, Volquez, and Chris Young are all 2 to 2.5 win players. And you got that basically for, I think, $8 million for Volquez and $7 million for Morales and $1 million, $2 million for Chris Young. So, I mean, you spent $17 million and you got six wins. I mean, and surplus.
The Yankees are paying Carlos Beltran $17 million right now.
Although, right.
So, pretty solid. and then now we'll move into the fun category, the pitching. After what we talked about, some of the offensive numbers that we tried to predict.
Oh, well, we did try to predict Alex Rios over a 285
my fault.
Batting
I skipped
average.
That. I skipped
oh, we
that.
Can totally skip it because we missed
it's
badly.
Worthy. That was unintentional, but
he was hurt intentional. And he was terrible, and he had one good month, basically. He still got hit 255, which is kind of surprising, considering he was at 200, like, forever. So
yeah, and thankfully that one good month was this past one.
Yeah.
So, you know, being on this playoff roster, you got to hope he can carry that in and that he can.
Yeah.
You know, you got to hope. we'll see, I guess, but
you will see. He's going to hit ninth anyway. So it's.
Yeah. It's, I mean, worst case scenario, it's not that big of a deal, but.
Right.
Now we can go into the pitching.
Yes.
We knew coming in it was going to be the kind of the cinch point for the Royals. The season was most likely going to turn on the pitching staff, and the pitching staff, save for Edinson Volquez, pretty much underperformed. Yet the Royals were able to overcome because of the increase in offense. And obviously still had best record in the American League. But first one we talked about, Danny Duffy, who actually, let's start with Yordano Ventura, opening day starter. we had him at 170 strikeouts for the over-under, which would have been a really good season for anybody. But little perspective, Clayton Kershaw just had 300.
Right.
For the first time in how many years did they say it was?
The last one was 2002.
Oh, it was
Randy
20,
Johnson.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Randy Johnson got like 310 or something.
So, and then, but anyway, his final number, and Mike picked the under, and I went with the over. I was bullish on Ventura in the offseason, and he finished with 154. So,
yeah,
pretty close. You think the way he's been rolling this last month, he's had those 6, 7, 8, 9 strikeout games. You think he had a couple more starts, maybe he would have got that number.
Yeah.
Overall an up and down season for Ventura, but the last month has been extremely encouraging as we head into the playoffs.
Oh, geez. I mean, he's going to start game one. And when the Royals acquired Johnny Cueto, would you have ever thought that?
that was the headline. The Royals got their number one.
I mean, you didn't figure that was going to happen. And even then, you know, Ventura was still, just recently back from the demotion, I think. So, that's a surprise there. But yeah, I mean, Ventura, he only started 28 games. He started 30 last year. He made another relief appearance. He threw, 19.2 fewer innings. You know, he had the suspension. He had the weird hand numbness stuff, you know, the cramps and whatnot. So he missed some innings.
He missed a couple, tack off an inning here or there for cramping early in the season, potassium issues, perhaps. Who knows? But
some of those games where he was, just horrible with runners on base. And so, his first half really kind of hindered him, but his second half, curveball's been so much better. The fastball's got more movement, but it's still the same velocity. He's pitching with a ton more confidence, and you can just, I know we bring this up a lot with him, and Neither of us are really big body language guys, but the body language is totally different too. There was a pitch in his last start and he threw it and it was like 98 and it cut out over the corner and he knew that the guy just was not going to swing at it. You could just tell by the way he was walking off the mound. He was like, yep, I got him. And that's a swagger. Yordano is dangerous because
I mean, yeah, that's what he had in the World Series.
Yeah. And you know, there were a couple of plays in his last start where, you know, he made really nice plays off the mound to get double plays and good defensive plays. So he's playing really well, and I think he's feeling really good. It was, you know, after a pretty weird first half, he still ended up, you know, a couple more scoreless innings, and he'd have gotten his ERA under four. He bumped his strikeout per nine by about a full strikeout, 7.8 last year, 8.6 this year. His walk rate went down. You know, everything else stayed about the same. His whip is almost exactly the same as it was last year at 1.298. His fielding independent pitching is actually better than it was last year. So don't let the ERA fool you. He's pitched great. And the strikeouts, he's the only real swing and miss kind of guy that the Royals have in their rotation. So that's going to be really important depending on who they face. If they face the Astros and he pitches the way he's been pitching, I mean, he's going to have a shot at another one of those double digit strikeout games. And that's going to be huge, especially in Kauffman. You know, if you can get the ball, you know, just to not even be put in play, that's an advantage. But with the defense and a big park and a home run hitting team that strikes out a lot, I mean, that's a really good matchup for him.
Yeah. And it was such a weird season because, like you said, you look at all his peripheral numbers and he's as good or better than last year in most categories. But that ERA kind of trips you up because it's, you know, three quarters of a run higher almost than it was last year. And it's when you looked at it and we talked about it throughout the season on the show, you know, he'd have a six inning, four run performance, maybe six strikeouts or something. And, you know, that's going to cause your ERA to jump. But at the same time,
like,
you know,
five of those innings, he pitched fine. It was just one.
Exactly. He had so many starts like that. I mean, there was a period where the right before the phantom demotion and the arrival of Johnny Cueto, where you truly were concerned because it was a more consistent kind of downturn. And it wasn't a super long time, but it got to the point where it was like, okay, it's not just one bad inning or a couple bad pitches. It looks like he's having issues. That's why they made the decision to send him down at the time. But other than that, which was maybe it was just a couple weeks, the rest of the season, it was always just like, you know, he would be cruising. He went through, I mean, there was one game, God, it was this sometime in August. He had, you know, 3 2/3 of an inning, where he's pitching a perfect game, just looking great. And then, you know,
oh, that was the Blue Jays series, I think.
Yeah. And then allows a hit, couple runners, and next thing you know, it's four or five runs that score. And it's like, oh man, what happened? You know, and so that seemed to be a kind of a recurring theme. And that's what's been most encouraging about the last month is because, you know, not only has it been so good, but there have been situations where he's been in there right at the tip of that breaking point this past month, you know, two guys on, one out or something, and he's gotten out of it. And that's that kind of step forward that you want to take if you are looking into, you know, that's the kind of step we hope that he had made last postseason that was going to carry over. And, you know, maybe he kind of took a step back this season, but hopefully he's taken two steps forward now. And it's coming at the right time.
Yeah. Yost said today, I think in one of the press conferences before that rally that, you know, making him the number one guy probably had him put too much pressure on himself, and that plus the contract, you know, expectations are really big right out of the gate. And, you know, maybe that's a result. And I think we brought that up back in April, May, you know, when all the weird chaos was happening too. So for him to kind of find his groove now, that's perfect timing. It's really exciting to just see what he does with hopefully multiple starts. I mean, you know, hopefully he gets a shot to.
Yeah, hopefully to five or bunch. Six.
Yep. fine with that.
Absolutely. It's just it all throughout the season. It kind of felt like when you heard Yost and Dayton Moore talk about Ventura, almost like they were dodging giving a kind of a true answer. And not only has Ventura looked more confident recently than the whole season, but the way they've spoken about him has been they're speaking more confidently about his ability and about his demeanor and his attitude right now, which I think is a positive sign, because it's not smoke and mirrors. It's not playing against easy opponents or whatever. It's everyone can see it. And this happens with players where all of a sudden, you know, they kind of get into that zone and everyone can see it. Everyone knows it's happening. And, you know, what are you going to do but sit back and watch? Yeah. And so that's kind of where it's feeling, where it's coming to with Ventura. You know, we'll see on Thursday how well he does in game one. But that, as of right now, that's kind of the feeling I'm getting.
Yeah. And, it speaks volumes that he's the game one starter.
Yeah.
When you got Cueto, who is, you know, at the time when he was
acquired, that's why they got him.
Top five guy, top five pitcher in all of baseball. And Ventura's going over. So, it's just really fun. And the last two starts Ventura's had have been really fun too. You know, just lights out, you know, almost, you know, went deep with a no hitter against the Cubs, just looked in control every step of the way. So, it's wildly encouraging.
Yes. But after Ventura, a big part of the season was supposed to be Danny Duffy, and the over-under that we had on him was 170 innings pitched, and both of us went with the under. He finished with 136.2 and actually didn't even finish the season in the starting rotation, and will be – and we talked about this through the last show or the one before, that, you know, there's a world where Danny Duffy is one of, if not the most valuable piece of this pitching staff in the postseason, considering how the bullpen can be used, and that he is, you know, not only can he come in that one batter, one inning situation, but he's stretched out because he's been a starter for most of the season. So he can go multiple innings if need be.
Yeah. And that's going to be a big deal for him, because I think with the Royals, they've been so confined to roles. And so the loss of Greg Holland is interesting, because now you kind of get a chance to play around with it. So I'm not sure where Duffy fits in on that, but he's a guy, if you need him to start in the sixth and give you two innings, he can do it. If you need him to come in and face a couple of lefties, he can do that. And I think he's just going to come out and just go, you know, and fire everything through. But, you know, his last six appearances of the year were all out of the bullpen. You know, he kind of had some good stretches here and there, but a lot of the early struggles really sunk him as far as just innings pitched. Kind of had a groove in June and July and then fell out of it in late August. And that's kind of what, you know, precipitated the whole move to the bullpen. But it also makes him a pretty dangerous guy out there, because, you know, he threw 8.1 innings. And, you know, one of the things we talked about, you know, through all of this was that, what's he doing with strikeouts? Well, you know, you look at what he did in those innings, you know, 12 strikeouts in 8.1 relief innings and only two walks, only four hits allowed. So he's a weapon out of that bullpen. And you lose Greg Holland, but you have Danny Duffy. So, you know, now you've basically got this quartet of Duffy, Herrera, Madsen, and Davis. And all of those guys are just high velocity, nasty stuff, high strikeout kind of guys. And no other team has that. You know, I mean, the Yankees have Andrew Miller and they have Dalen Betances, but they don't have four guys like that.
Yeah. And the fifth guy is Hoschaber.
Yeah. Who's,
you know, so
spotty, but effective
at his top level is one of those guys. You know, he's in that category. He hasn't been there this season.
Yeah.
You know, but the 2013 Luke Hoschaber is in that category. So, you know, that's when he's your fifth guy, even with the season he's had, he would be most bullpens, you know, third option. They're your seventh inning guy.
Yeah, he could be, if you will, set up or even closer on some teams.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that he's your fifth option in the bullpen right now.
Yeah.
that says something about your bullpen. And I completely agree about Danny Duffy. It's be really, really huge weapon to be able to have him come in. And it's really, I think, kind of been able to focus him a little bit and just kind of let it rip. And he's being able to get those strikeouts is incredibly encouraging because, yeah, that's what we'd always coming up. He was going to be that guy. He was going to be that strikeout pitcher.
95
from 6'4" lefty. I mean, he was, he's a, you know, should be striking out more, but what was happening? And, you know, to see that come alive, even if it's coming out of the bullpen and not as a starter, really encouraging. And, you know, if he's, you know, if you're a starter and you're going to run up a 50 some odd pitch count in three innings, that's not very good. But if you're, you know, coming in the fourth inning and you're just trying to bridge the gap until the seventh, then you can throw 50 some odd pitch. It doesn't matter. You know, right. I mean, it matters for, you know, making sure you have enough rest afterwards and all that. But, you know,
you don't have to pace yourself to try to get, you just get that inning.
Yep. That's just get until you know, they can bring somebody else in and you don't have to worry about saving the rest of the bullpen or anything because you are the bullpen. So
I think it's interesting that the Royals improved by 6 wins and the two pitchers that, you know, we felt were going to be the big part this season, Ventura and Duffy, pitched fewer innings each. It's kind of weird.
It's kind of weird
how it all kind of ended up fitting together. But I mean, you know, a better offense is going to do that for you too. So
yeah, and we'll kind of group these next two together. we had Chris Medlin with 25 innings pitched as the over under. Mike, you picked the under. I went with the over. He finished with 58.1, and he is. Yost hasn't officially announced the fourth starter, and I think conventional wisdom says it's between Medlin and Chris Young, but I think Medlin kind of has the upper hand, just track record history, that kind of a thing. But Chris Young being the other over-under that we had him at 10 starts, and we both picked over for that, and he finished with 18 starts. So, I mean, since there is at least some possibility of consternation over who that fourth starter is going to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, who do you feel most because Chris Young came out after his, you know, after the horrible news of his father passing away and pitched the fantastic 5-inning of no hit baseball in his last start. Was that his last, did he have another start after that? Or was that his last?
Yeah, he threw another start. He threw another, just the third to last game of the year. And it, I mean, yeah, it's so weird because I think a month ago we were talking about this, but it was between Medlin and Duffy. Mm-hmm. And we figured it was going to be Medlin, and Medlin then, you know, didn't pitch as well in a couple of starts. And then Chris Young, you know, just a couple of days after the Royals clinched, you know, the Royals clinched on the 24th and they had their hangover game and then they lost again. And then it was that Sunday and you know, Medlin that the night before learned that his father had passed away, goes out, throws 5 no hit innings. The Royals had a no hitter until I think the 7th. And yeah, I mean, and that start really is where a lot of the pitching jump started. Since that game, this Royals team, their starters have thrown 48.1 innings. They gave up 8 earned runs in that stretch.
Yeah.
Just okay. And pretty much everybody went 6 innings other than Johnny Cueto in the last inning. Or the last start, which was just kind of a tune-up, and Chris Young in that first one where he hadn't even started in a month and a half or so. You know, the Royals just they really kind of turned it on that last stretch of 10 games or so, and Chris Young started it. So I don't know. I mean, I think it depends so much on the matchup that I think you have to lean Medlin. Just because Chris Young is such an extreme flyball guy, and both Minute Maid and Yankee Stadium are really bad for flyball pitchers,
which is where that fourth start would be,
right? You know, because they would either have to pick one of them to be number two and pitch in Kauffman, which is kind of, you know, risky,
It's unorthodox.
Yeah. Or wait till game five, which you don't really want to do either. So
yeah, you're hoping to avoid a game five if you can.
Right. And so, I don't know. I think Yost said something today that it's possible, or maybe this was reported by McCullough, that it was possible they might even do Ventura on short rest for game four if they needed to, which I think would also land Cueto on regular rest the next day, which would be interesting because then you don't even have to worry about who the fourth starter is. You would probably have to in the next round because it's, you know, two more games. But, you know, it's possible that the fourth starter doesn't even come into play in this series. I think they still would. But, you know, I guess it's also possible the Royals might just sweep and just make it a moot point anyway.
It'd be fantastic, wouldn't it?
I would like that. But I think they probably have to go Medlin. You know, it just seems like they have to go Medlin just because of the fly ball, ground ball. Medlin, you know, half the things put in play end up being ground balls for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's got good control, you know, doesn't walk a lot of guys. I think you kind of have to go with him over Chris Young at this point, even though Young has pitched so well in the last two games.
Yeah.
So
I think with Medlin, there's only like one game I can really think of off the top of my head where he gave up like six runs in three innings or something a few weeks ago, I think. But that's the only game I can really think of where it just kind of truly got away from him and got out of hand, you know.
Yeah, the ball was up a lot in that game, as I remember. Yeah, and I think it was against the White Sox or Indians.
That sounds right.
I don't remember exactly.
But it's – so that was you know, other than that, he's typically really good at limiting the damage when he does get into bad situation, and he's very pitch efficient, as we've talked about before.
Yep.
So I think that gives him the leg up in the scenario in the, let's see. Okay. Just found it. Yeah. It was Cleveland. Well, he had another game like that. Okay. That I forgot about that one. White Sox one where he gave up 7 5 2/3 innings. So those two games, you know, were the roughest that he'd had, but, you know, there was, in terms of his starts, I mean, those are the only times that he gave up more than three runs.
Yeah.
So, and he had two, his last two starts, hold on, let me get this. Let's see. His last couple. So that his second to last start was the sixth inning game, but then he came right back and pitched six innings, only gave up one run. And his two starts before the sixth inning game, he didn't give up any runs in 11.1 innings. So, and he earned runs, I should say.
Right.
but the, so yeah, I feel like you're going to feel a little bit more confident about Chris Young Chris Medlin. Cause when Young was having his issues that caused him to go into the bullpen, it felt like it was something that, you know, starts would kind of spiral out of control. And he was in that kind of, I don't want to say this in a mean way, but in that kind of Jeremy Guthrie mold, sometimes Guthrie would get in his, there's nothing he can do. He's just out there throwing meatballs and you got to get him out of there. And that's what it kind of felt like sometimes in a few Young starts, I think. And I think that's what gives him the leg up, but that's just,
That's not really, I think, science. A lot of that was fatigue. I think, you know, comparing just last year to this year, those bad starts happened at about the same time that he was finishing up last season with Seattle. And in those same kind of that same stretch in that same part of the year, innings wise, you know, it was a lot of those same things where he was just, you know, not being able to finish starts and not being able to finish innings and things like that, just because, you know, that guy's had some injuries. And so to get through them, you know, he really needed some rest, and the Royals gave him rest, and it seemed to rejuvenate him at the right time. So I guess if they need to, they have Medlin and Young in the bullpen, or, you know, whichever of the two that they want to go as a fourth starter, which, you know, they both have pitched well enough that that's not really a bad, that's not a bad thing. You know, it's just a matter of, I think, just you can't pitch Chris Young in Yankee Stadium. They'll put so many lefties against him, and I don't think it would go well. I guess in Houston, maybe it would be a little better because the short porch is in right or in left field. So that'd be more of like a pull for a right-handed batter. But I don't know. Chris Medlin also is more of kind of a curveball changeup, which that might bode better for him. So I would say Medlin at this stage, but Chris Young definitely has pitched well enough to at least be considered. But I just think the circumstances aren't going to be viable for him to be a starter in a playoff game, at least in the divisional series.
Yeah, I completely agree. So as we said, Ned Yost holding that one close to the vest. Hopefully we don't even have to answer the question. They can just sweep him and be done with it.
Yep.
And go on to the ALCS where it will matter, but we can talk about that then. So the final kind of over under we had, we'll just kind of gloss over.
They weren't fancy.
Yeah, it was Brandon Finnegan, 15. Did we major league starts or minor league?
Minor league starts.
Minor league starts. He finished with 15, but he was traded. Sean Manaea, 15. Are we both on Finnegan? We both had the under. And then Sean Manaea, 15 innings pitched in the majors. We both went over on that. He finished with zero.
Whoops.
Also was traded. So that made that a little bit different. And then the final one was Brett Eibner playing in 15 games, finished at a strong zero. Mike, you had the over. I had the under on that. But I think I was borderline on that because I was in – Eibner believer, and I do think he's going to factor into this organization at some point, especially with Rios being a free agent after this season that the Royals probably are not going to sign. There's going to be an opening, so who knows?
Yeah, I mean, you could have Eibner and Orlando out there. Yeah, I think with Manaea at the time, we weren't aware that he had, I think it was like an oblique thing, and that left him in instructionals longer, and mm-hmm. so that basically held him back a month or two. Finnegan, I got the feeling that the Royals really felt he was a reliever. And I think when they traded him, that pretty much bears that out. Mm-hmm. The Reds wanted him to start. So, you know, he ended up starting, and I think he made two starts in the big leagues as well. So, that's just Finnegan. I mean, just
Finnegan,
how it really happened, I guess.
Yeah. He really felt almost identical to Aaron Crow in how his career kind of went with the Royals and how they handled him. Obviously he didn't have as much time with the Royals as Crow did. But started out hot, looked great, kind of flattened out a little bit, maybe and regressed. And then they kept kind of, with Aaron Crow every season, it was, we're going to make him a starter. We're going to make him a starter. And he always ended up back in the bullpen. Right. And that was the same deal with Finnegan this year. It was, we're going to stretch him out. We're going to make him a starter.
And then after three minor league starts, they
called him up. They moved him back to the starting rotation down in minor leagues. Then they called him back up. And then he was amazing. And it was just, it was a big
mess. He never got any kind of spot to even attempt to start. And I think the Royals, they wouldn't have done it if they believed that he could actually start. I mean, they had guys they could have brought.
They would have let him. Yeah, they would have let him go. But, I agree. I don't think they truly believed that he was going to be a starter. But they also didn't put him in a good position to succeed this year as a starter or a reliever because of how they handled this situation. So if there's any misstep that the Royals made in managing this season from the offseason all the way to now, that would be the only one. But then they traded him away and they got Johnny Cueto for him. So
yeah. And I think obviously the only guy I think they're going to miss in that trade really is going to be Cody Reed.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can find guys like Finnegan. I mean, Finnegan, not to, rip on the guy, but you can find guys who can give you a lot of the same stuff. He never really got a third pitch going.
Yeah, he was a two-pitch guy.
And, those guys are destined to go into the bullpen. And, if he can develop changeup or something, hey, good for him, and I'd be glad to see it. But I just, I don't think the Royals were seeing that happening. And, so he got traded. And the Reds are going to try to make him a starter. And I'm gonna guess he's going to end up in a bullpen there, too.
Yeah. So now we'll move on. Those were the over-unders, but then we also, because we love all you listeners, decided to give you some bold predictions that we made. And we'll start with mine here. My first bold prediction was that the Royals would hit 2 million in attendance. They finished with 2.7, a little over 2.7 million, a new franchise record for them. Second bold prediction was Sean Manaea with 25 innings in the big leagues, finished with zero and was traded. So that was kind of a faux pas on my part.
Kyle Zimmer reprise.
Yes. Yes. Who will next year? It'll be Miguel Almonte. That's who I'll graduate to. Now
he got 8.2 this year. So
yeah,
Almonte's probably got a good shot at breaking that.
Yeah, and
you might actually get it that time.
Maybe if they can surgically reattach Zimmer's arm, finally he might be able to give some decent time in the majors. We'll see.
Maybe.
And then my final bold prediction was that Lorenzo Cain would have above 300 batting average for the second year in a row, and he finished at 307. So feeling pretty good about my bold predictions. The Manaea thing, is what it is. But 2 million in attendance, so great to see the fans represent. Last the off season, they showed not only did the Royals show it wasn't a fluke by winning this season, but the fans showed that it wasn't just the newness of a playoff run. It was, we want to support this team wholeheartedly, not just a playoff run. And they did, absolutely, franchise record, everything. So organization always said they'd put more money into the team if the fans showed up. And fans always said if they put more money into the team,
we'll show up.
And, became a winner, we'd show up. They put more money into the team. It started in the minors and in Latin American development years and years ago. Finally saw it came to fruition. The fans put the money where their mouth is, and then so did the organization. $100+ million payroll, highest in history, franchise record in attendance, merchandise
best
sales.
Ratings out in baseball.
Best ratings in baseball.
Best ratings absolutely. In baseball since like 2002.
Yeah, which I believe was either the season. I think it was the following season that the Mariners, after they had set the win record. Was that right?
Maybe.
Because 2001, they won 116 games, I think. But I'd have to go back. But
yeah, I think so. I don't remember. I didn't look. I just saw it on a release today. So
yeah. Either way, it's certainly impressive. Now, it's not New York that has that. It's not Chicago. It's not St. Louis. It's Kansas City. But that was awesome to see. And then Lorenzo Cain, people were wondering if, last year was a fluke. It was the first year that he was fully healthy for the entire year. Would he be able to keep it up? Is he a 300 hitter, or did he just have a really good season? And, I was a buyer in the Lorenzo Cain stock, and he proved it all season long. He was consistent. He dipped a little bit below. I don't know that he ever went below 290. If he did, it was only for a game or two. Never had any super huge cold streaks. Always seemed to have that big, big hit, big home run, big play when he needed it. So super great to see Lorenzo Cain take that step to being a star in this league, which is what he is now.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of did what you want to see from Hosmer, like we were talking earlier, where it's just, there are down stretches, but it's, you're still consistent with them. You're still kind of producing somewhere. I'm trying to take a look at his game logs to see the last time he was under 290. He was under 290 for about a week in mid-June, and that was about it. He got as high as 322 on July 18th. So in a month, he basically put 40 points on his batting average right there, finished it, 307. Cain had a great season, which goes right into one of my bold predictions, which was that he would hit 15 homers this year, and he hit 16, which I was actually surprised. I didn't think he would get that, but I knew that he'd had a little bit of power in the minors. He's just somebody who's, got a lot of athleticism, and if he can stay healthy, maybe with some comfort, he could hit the ball out more. And he certainly did. And a lot of those home runs were like 400 foot or more. So it's not like they were cheapies. He drove the ball quite a lot. And, you know, like you said, he's a legit superstar at this stage, you know, exciting, you know, highlight kind of guy, performs. I think Aaron Stille wrote something on Royals Authority today that it's like maybe the fifth or sixth time that a Royals hitter has had a seven war season, or the seventh different player or something like that. I'm getting the stat wrong on it, but you know, 7.2 wins above replacement according to Baseball Reference.
Yeah, something impressive.
Which is extremely good. I mean, he might be a top five MVP candidate when it's all said and done, which is pretty awesome considering, you know, this is a guy.
Yeah, who, I mean, after Trout and Donaldson, I don't know that I can think of somebody who's more worthy than him.
There's no clear cut number three. So I guess you could go with like a Dallas Keuchel or David Price or something if you wanted to.
Yeah, that, maybe a Prince Fielder, but
maybe. Yeah, but I mean, Kane, I mean, both sides of the ball. He does it.
Yeah, so. He's definitely going to get some votes, and he should.
Yeah, he definitely should. He was that guy, number three all year. So mm-hmm. He definitely deserves that. Another one of my bold predictions was that Christian Colon would end up being the starting second baseman by the end of the year, which wasn't as much about Colon as it was about Monte. So I'm kind of counting this as half right, because Infante did not end the year, you know, a miserable season as a hitter, you know, just real bad at the plate. He had about four games that were, you know, even tolerable pretty much. And then ended up getting hurt at the end of the year. And I don't think he's going to make the playoff rosters at all. So, but it wasn't Colon playing second at the end of the year. It was Ben Zobrist, which I, you know, wouldn't have guessed.
Could not have foreseen.
Yeah, but, you know, still, it certainly wasn't Infante. And I think Zobrist is okay. I'd rather Zobrist than Colon anyway. So I'll,
yeah,
I don't need to be right on that one. And the last one, which I kind of really had to strain myself to even make a bold prediction, was that Mike Moustakas would have an OPS plus above 100. And I made that call in the midst of probably that same day I was tweeting, griping about Yost, saying he was going to bat him second because, you know, Moustakas, his track record up to this season was not good. You know, a lot of disappointments, especially last year where he, you know, did go to the minors. Mm-hmm. And then he comes in with this promise of a new approach and, you know, okay, we've heard this before, you know, I'll believe it when I see it.
Right. Okay, Bob Hamlin.
And it happened. And, you know, that first month, he really kind of wrote it out. The power was there. He had a career high in home runs and RBIs. He had that killer 9 RBI game. He made an all-star team. You know, he ended up at a 120 OPS, which OPS plus, which is right up there with Gordon. And, you know, what can you say about him? I mean, he, you know, kept his strikeouts down. You know, he had one more strikeout than Alcides Escobar, who you would think is a high contact kind of guy, is you know, gonna have low strikeouts. But he walked a lot. He had, you know, I think second most doubles on the team, tied for the lead in home runs, third most RBIs. You know, I mean, he had a solid season, and yeah. I think that approach was a big part of it. You know, gave him some confidence. He even hit a really rough stretch in. I think it was right after the All-Star game and, you know, just kind of came through it. And, you know, we talked about Chris Young. I mean, Moustakas, we didn't even find this out until like a month after, but his mom passed away in August. And, you know, he had missed time twice earlier in the year to go tend to her because, you know, she's been battling cancer for years. And so to come through and have that kind of a year, you know, and stay focused is just pretty incredible. So it's nice to see Moustakas do that kind of thing. He's, according to Baseball Reference, he's second on the Royals in wins above replacement, which never ever would have guessed that. I didn't think he would get that as my bold prediction. He did it.
He's matched his previous 4-year total just this year in WAR. I mean, it's really, according to Baseball Reference, but it's just so impressive. I mean, literally sets a career record, a career high in every category: batting average, on base, slugging, OPS, OPS plus, home runs, RBIs. I mean, just across the board, such a fantastic season for him. Deserved All-Star game appearance. And it's, you know, I if I remember correctly, when you brought that up as a bold prediction, I think that was, I was probably a little dismissive of that as just a non-believer, because as much as I was buying,
didn't believe it, so.
As much as I was buying the Lorenzo Cain hype train, I was selling the Mike Moustakas renewed approach hype train, and I didn't want anything to do with it. But you know, it held true, and like you said, he had that little rough patch, and so that was the Boo Birds came out, and it was, oh, back to the old Moustakas. He's not really fixed. And then he corralled the issues, got back on track.
He adjusted, and he never done
absolutely. That. And he had, you know, 284 batting average, but then a 348 on base percentage. And like I always like to talk about that kind of isolated on base, like, you know, just to kind of put in perspective when I talk about that, the Omar Infante, the last year before he came to the Royals, when he was with Detroit, his on base percentage was 345, right? And Moose's was 315 this year, but his Omar Infante's batting average was 318, and Mike Moustakas is 284, so nearly a greater than 60-point differential between the two. So it's his on-base percentage wasn't just inflated by the fact that he had a really good year hitting. He was helping the team in other ways. You know, whereas Infante, he's never been a big on-base guy. And yeah, 345 on base looks good for him. But when you look at the batting average, you see he wasn't really drawing a ton of walks. He just happened to have a really good year. And so as his batting average went down, so did his on-base, to the point where this year he had a 220 batting average and a 234 on base. So he, when his hitting wasn't there, he wasn't able to help the team. But Mike Moustakas, with his renewed approach this year, when his hitting wasn't there, he was still able to help the team. He was able to get on base, you know, able to still, you know, sacrifice flies, different things like that can help out the team that he wasn't able to do in the past, which was so encouraging. And just, you know, you wondered how much of last postseason, setting the Royals postseason home run record and all the renewed approach, how much of it was real and was going to carry over. And it appears it all did.
Yep. I mean, hopefully it just keeps right going from there. I mean, you know, I mean, it's another thing where Moustakas is, you know, this year he turned 27. So, you know, maybe that's just kind of the maturity factor of it. You know, 27 also is kind of when players start hitting their prime. So
it's that kind of baseball peak.
Yeah. If he's hitting his prime years and has finally, you know, embraced making adjustments and whatever preparation and whatnot, you know, maybe he's not a lost cause. Maybe they figured it out. Maybe Ned Yost was correct in sticking with him all this time. So, I mean, at this point, Ned Yost keeps being right more than he's wrong. So,
yeah, I won't fight him anymore.
Right. I'm just like, Yost all at right, this point. I'll just, you know, hands
wanna
up.
Bat, off you want a bad Esky? Want a bad Esky leadoff? Go for it.
Yep. But they won the last five games of the year, and they were the five games that Escobar was back in leadoff. So,
yeah, and we'll kind of use that to kind of come into our final point. That's all the bold predictions and over-unders we talked about. And the last thing we'll kind of leave you with here is looking at, you know, Ned Yost has said Escobar's going to lead off in the playoffs. So yep, that's the way it's going to be. And playoffs, we talked about, we're watching Houston versus New York now. Houston has taken a 2-0 lead in the fourth inning. So off another home run. Yeah. So we will see right now. It looks like it could be Houston. Dallas Keuchel looks like he's firing on all cylinders so far, and Yankees look pretty flummoxed. So we'll see. It could be Houston showing up on Thursday here in Kansas City. Either way, regardless of who it is, Escobar will be the first hitter that they face. I mean, you can't, like you said, they finished the season 5-0 on the last five games, and 8-5 in their last, from their, if you draw a line at their last off day. They've been 8-5 since then, and then they finished the season 5-0. You know, so I mean, considering that the September October period was the only losing month the Royals had all season, ending it on a bit of a brighter note is a positive as they go into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of the question of, hey, are they going to be able to just flip the switch? Because they came into September and they had that huge lead. And I think it's only human nature to just be like, well, all right, we can coast. And they didn't look like they were playing their best. And so, you know, when they actually clinched and the next day they put out the hangover lineup and everybody's freaking out, like, oh my God, they don't want the home field advantage and yada, yada, yada. I mean, you know, they get to that end of the year and, you know, the last five games looked like the Royals you saw, you know, from April to August. I mean, you know, good defense, good timely hitting, good pitching, you know, all of that. It was all together and everything kind of meshed right back into where it had been. And it was almost like the bad September didn't even happen. I mean, they didn't look any worse than they, you know, they looked good. And so hopefully that does carry over. I mean, momentum's I don't know. I don't know how real it is, especially when you have a number of days off like the Royals are getting right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can that really carry over? I don't know. But, you know, it's certainly better to finish 5-0 than not, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it was for me, I think it kind of switched on in that makeup game against the Cubs. It was right before they, you know, it was from May. That they had, it was the big
you know,
Royals Twitter fam kind of caravan. That's what I was looking for. Up to Chicago and got rained out. They played it. They had an off day before they were supposed to play the White Sox, so they played the Cubs, and they lost in the 11th inning in a walk off to the Cubs. But that game kind of felt like a bit of a playoff atmosphere. Cubs are one of the best teams in baseball. Royals are one of the best teams in baseball. They were going head to head. Yordano Ventura pitched that game, I believe. Is that right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And he, that was kind of one of the really good games that he was, that he'd had over that last stretch and against a really good team that he's in the playoffs and plays tomorrow night. And then, you know, and it's the rookie Almonte that gave up the game winner in the 11th inning. So, you know, he's probably not even going to be on the playoff roster. So there's, you know, in the playoffs, that probably wouldn't have happened. They probably would have put somebody else in there, but
yeah. Or had somebody go extra, you know, an inning longer,
right. You know,
stretch exactly. It out a little bit. So, I mean, it's the guys who are going to be on the actual playoff roster pitched well, and mm-hmm. the whole team overall played really well. That was a really fun game. It was like, thankfully, it happened after the Royals clinched, because then there was just like nothing, you know,
no pressure or anything.
Once they clinched, I wasn't really worried about anything. You know, before I was still a little tense, even though I knew mathematically there's the craziest, you know, low probability that they were going to not win the division.
Right.
That's a weird sentence, but but it was just once they clinched, I was like, all right, let's just, you know, see what happens.
Have some fun.
And that game was really fun, even though they lost it in really dramatic fashion. It was just like, it was fun. It was a good atmosphere, you know, Wrigley, of course, and just, you know, so much going on. And so, you know, and the Royals, you know, that was right after the Chris Young game, the first one. And so that was, you know, that set the stage for the rest of the guys. And you know, everybody kind of pitched well from there and played better from there.
And that was September 30, looking at the wrong date. That was September 28th. But I was going to say it was on the anniversary of the wild card game, but I looked at the wrong date. But for me, if there's a light switch that goes on in this scenario, that was the game. And you know, they came out, and probably because it was a longer game the night before, they lost to the White Sox the next day, and they didn't look back, and they pretty much dominated the last five games against the White Sox and the Twins. So, and the, you know, it's not like it was just those teams were mailing it in either. I mean, the Twins had
Twins
were in that wild card race up until, you know, basically the last game, second to last game of the season or so.
Yep.
So they were, they were still playing for something. The White Sox weren't really, but I mean, it's
other than I think the White Sox hate the Royals. So
other than that, yes. so, those are encouraging signs. And I guess the last thing to kind of go over, we've kind of talked about this, so we'll throughout the kind of last few months of the season, but we can just briefly go over. Mike, tell me right now. I know you know the score of the game and that Houston's winning, but who do you want to play? Give me the gut feeling from Michael Engel right now.
I've changed my mind so many times because the Astros don't play well on the road. Their bullpen hasn't been good. They're such a high strikeout team. They're so reliant on home runs that I think those things really work well for the Royals. But Houston's a good defensive team. They, aren't just mashers. I mean, Carlos Correa and George Springer are really good at everything.
Is they Altuve?
Altuve. They've got a better starting rotation than the Yankees, including the presumptive Cy Young Award winner.
Yes.
And Keuchel, who, even though he'd only throw one game.
You think probably, he takes it over David Price?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's close. I mean, you can't be wrong.
Okay, you're not going to. Yeah, there's no wrong answer to that question. But
I don't know. The Yankees, they're not as good defensively. I think their rotation is thinner. They haven't played very well down the stretch. They'll be again without Tanaka. So I don't know. I the Royals are favored in either case. I would really, really, really hope that the Royals would win both games in Kansas City so that they just have to get one out of two on the road. And so, I guess I'm hoping for the Yankees. But they do have, guys like Greg Bird and Brett Gardner have been really good. They've got a good bullpen. I don't know. I can't make up my mind.
Yeah.
I'll say tough. Yankees.
No. I think I would go Yankees too. Teixeira's been out for a while, and so he's obviously gone. And then, in terms of, you want to talk their rotation, they're pitching Masahiro Tanaka tonight, so he's not going to be ready. Now, of course, the flip side is Dallas Keuchel is not going to be ready either for game one if it's the Astros, but the Astros' second starter, Lance McCullers, I feel less comfortable going up against him than I do.
Severino would be Nova.
Yeah, or, Michael Pineda for any one of them. Versus McCullers or even McHugh or Kazmir from the Astros. So, there's the pitching staff, but then, the Royals and what they showed a good ability to do last year in the playoffs, kind of stick around, get through the starter and get to people's bullpens and win the game that way. Cause the Royals bullpen could outmatch anybody's and they definitely outmatch the Astros right now in the bullpen. So, even if you're going up against a guy like Keuchel, if you can go up against him with someone like Ventura and, you're dueling it out and it's like a one run game when you get to the sixth or seventh and then they have to go to their bullpen and so do the Royals, you're feeling really good about that game.
So you're basically at a stalemate and just, holding them in position until you can
win. Yeah. Now that's with the Astros though, but you feel less good in that scenario with the Yankees because they have a better bullpen. So, but overall, I think I'd rather the Yankees. I think they're a little bit more of an aged team and a little bit thinner. They were kind of last couple months of the season looked like they were kind of running on fumes a little bit. I mean, they had mid-season, they had a comfortable lead in the division and ended up losing by six games, I think. Obviously, not many people predicted Toronto going on a ridiculous tear like they did. But all the same, the Yankees certainly helped them out with that. But so if it's me, I'd go Yankees. But I mean,
for storylines and such too, just because there's so much playoff history between the teams. At least, the Royals' prime. you know, back in the late 70s and even a lot of animosity in the early 80s and stuff like that. So I think the Yankees you'd see that Brett slide into third against Greg Nettles, and you'd see Chris Chambliss. You'd see those highlights over and over and over through the series. So I think that'd be fun too. But
yeah, I mean the big home run George Brett hit, and was that game five of the ALCS or what?
That was game three in 1980 because they swept them.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Knew it was the clinching game, but
yeah, some real slow trot around bases.
there's a lot of history, but those, and you know, my dad growing up, it was like everyone hates the Yankees, you know, everyone gets that part of it. But growing up for me, it was just kind of like, if I hated it's hard to hate anyone as a Royals fan, just because normally you hate like a rival, and they were never good enough to have a rival really. But if you hated anyone, it was the Twins. I hated the Twins, and still do, of course, but that seemed like bigger to me. But my dad always hated the Yankees, and it was because that was the era that he grew up in, where, you know, it was Royals and Yankees every year, and they were battling it out for the playoffs and into the playoffs and, you know, to go into the World Series. And it was, you know, finally in 1980 when they broke through, finally took down the Yankees. I mean, because the Yankees were who beat them in 77 when they won 102 games. And my dad said he was at that game five in Kansas City. Ugh. And he goes, it was the quietest that he's ever heard any stadium leaving a sporting event. He said you could hear a pin drop. It was just an awful, awful feeling. So, I mean, there's just so much history between the two teams. So it would be really cool. And it would be really cool to see what Fox Sports that's got the division series?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be really cool to see what they could come up with and what they could do with all the highlight reel stuff from the 70s and 80s between the two teams. I think that'd be a lot of fun. But right now, it's not looking good for the Yankees. So we will see what happens. But, I mean, actually, the kind of a weird realization, next time we record, you know, we could be talking ALCS or we could be talking, you know, season in review.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird to think, but it could. It's
possible.
Let's hope it's the former and not the latter. But next time we record, we will know, I think, right? Because it'll be, I guess if it went to five games, what would be the fifth game? Would that be Monday night or would that be Tuesday?
It is Thursday, Friday in Kansas City, Sunday and Monday in wherever. Houston,
so it'd New be York. Back. It'd be Wednesday, or would it be Tuesday?
I could be Wednesday.
Yeah, travel day in between. So
yeah.
So I guess theoretically, if it was coming back for a game five, then we could still be in the throes of it. But
right.
Hopefully
they just sweep and
they just sweep.
We're waiting on Toronto and Texas to beat each other up.
Yep. And speaking of watching other teams that are not yours play baseball. That'll actually be a fun series to watch. I mean, there's going to be a lot of runs.
That's going
to
be fun.
In the Rangers Blue Jays series.
Any of the NL side is really fun. Like, I think Dodgers and Mets will be really fun. It doesn't matter who wins the wild card game. Whoever faces the Cardinals, that's going to be real fun. Hopefully the Cubs, because they hate each other so much.
That would be a fun series.
Oh, that'll be so fun.
Think about that. A five game series between those teams. Oh. There's a lot of hate going between those two.
That would be awesome. I think it'd be hilarious. That's just a fun side. I mean, it's just going to be, it's all going to be fun. It's feasibly that if the Astros win this game, that's probably the most, I guess, boring series in the ALDS between them and the Royals.
Yeah.
But I guess you could also have the Astros might have that kind of label of this year's Royals because it kind of came out of nowhere and wild card team and, you know, maybe things working at the right time. I don't know.
Yeah, and I still, this is not my stat, and I can't, I wish I could remember where I first saw it. I could credit them, but I still think it's awesome that 30 years to the day, it could work out, could, that 1985 ALCS was Royals Blue Jays, and the NLCS was Cardinals Dodgers, and then obviously Royals Cardinals, and the Royals won the World Series. 30 years later to the day, could be Royals Blue Jays in the ALCS, and it could be Cardinals Dodgers in the NLCS, and could be Royals Cardinals in the World Series, obviously. So there's a lot of symmetry there that I just think those things are really cool. It doesn't mean anything, but it's really interesting that just Royals went 29 years without making the playoffs, made it last year, and they're back again. And then Blue Jays went 22 years and finally ended that drought. And it just so happens that they're the best two teams in the American League on a collision course 30 years after they had an epic ALCS where the Royals were down 3-1 and came back and won in 7 games. So it's just cool to me to kind of see that. And obviously if it was the same result as 85, I would absolutely take that.
I'd be all for that as well.
Controversial call or no, I would take it.
Yeah. I don't care how it happens.
Yes.
Doesn't matter.
So yeah. Well, with that, we will leave you, on this morning, evening, afternoon, whenever you're listening to the show. We got a fun ride here. Hopefully, a fun next few weeks of a ride. Stick with us. As always, we've done the last few years, you know, whenever the Royals season ends, we are still going to be doing shows in the off season. They might be less frequent, but we'll still be doing them. So, absolutely keep tuning in for the rest of the playoffs and into the off season. Again, thank you everyone so much for listening. It's been an absolute blast this season being able to podcast about this awesome team and have you guys listen and interact with us on Twitter and through emails and whatever else. So keep it up. Let us know. Send us tweets, emails, whatever. We love hearing from everyone who listens to the show. And keep listening. It's going to be a fun ride here in October for the second year in a row. Stick with us throughout the playoffs. We'll have some great stuff for you. For Michael Engel, I am Jeff Furr. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Royals.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Kansas City Baseball Vault. If you want to email your thoughts or comments, send those to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also subscribe through iTunes, through Stitcher, or you can just go to RoyalsPodcast.com or KansasCityBaseballVault.com for any updates.